It takes more than remembering you're on call this week to be a great software engineer. This is Soft Skills Engineering episode 439. I am your host, Dave Smith.
I'm your host and actually in real life currently on call person, Jameson Dance.
Soft Skills Engineering is a weekly advice podcast for software developers. Whether you're on call or not, we think you'll enjoy it.
We actually have like a fake alarm that triggers a page when the on-call shift hands off, and it hands off during the workday, so it's... Yeah, you're not going to get woken up by it. But it is kind of nice because you definitely remember you are on call. If you miss all the other notifications or whatever, all these systems have some way of like telling you you're going on call. But we have the final boss of telling you you are on call, which is a fake incident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you have to acknowledge within 1 minute or it escalates to your boss.
Yeah, which is me, I guess, in this case. Escalates to me.
Self-escalation, the ultimate in self-actualization.
Yes. Let's thank our patrons, which I will do. I will take charge by doing it. I want to thank the folks who contribute at such a ridiculous, outrageous, yet still surprisingly affordable amount of money that we shout them out every week. Thank you, too. This question comes from an anonymous listener. They say, hi, Dave and Jameson, what is your favorite color?
Nice.
Alexander Kuznetsov. 10 print mark Lucas Morton is cool, go to 10. Nick Molyneux, APA2 with little music emojis. Attribute error, none type object has no attribute to string. Javier Gonzalez, Chewy, Ted Timbrell, Alexa set an alarm for 4 a.m. Become a senior engineer.com. Unsalted French fries are morally objectionable. Dan from Drone Deploy, Chase W. Norton. Dave, do you want to read our first question? Level up your TypeScript with typehero.dev. Never is not just how rude of me. To just ask and then keep barreling through.
They got gotcha.
Never is not just a crater on Mars flamingo emoji. I like chicken, I like liver, meowx, meowx. Please deliver. Trash Panda, Kyle Boss, Kenzie Dodds, Nevar is not just a planet in the Vulcan system. Jenny Kim, Owen Shartle, the stochastic parrot. Helicone.ai, best observability tool for AI. Red Panda is best panda. TypeScript is a Microsoft conspiracy. Jonathan King's Nye, beautiful functional user documentation. The artist formerly known as Object Object. Cody sailing to WilliamAngel.net.
Oh, wow.
I'm a good little podcast host and I say whatever my soft skillets write.
Nice.
Travis, Braden Keynes, John Grant. This person's name is too hard to pronounce.
Yep.
Joe Grossberg. If you would like to join this illustrious crew, Dave, don't gloss over this bit. Maybe it's different. Go to softskills.audio. And I hear you like movies involving time travel. I'm not going to be able to pronounce
Chronocrimines?
Los Chronocrimines? I don't know. It's a great one. Don't watch the trailer. It's not good. Cody Seh. And then ran out of... Either changed their name from Cody Sale to Cody Seh or ran out of characters.
I wouldn't be surprised either way. Don't watch the trailer. Yeah. Just watch the movie.
Okay.
Oh, it's Spanish. It's Los Chronocrimines. That means time crimes.
Ah.
Nice. I'm going in.
No, I have to watch it.
Weekend plans canceled.
Thank you so much. Yes. Unless time travel is like, unless I learn how to time travel from this movie. And then
I already weekend watched plans it.
Can remain. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh.
We appreciate you. We appreciate the joy you bring to our lives. And you can bring additional joy if you want to join this group by going to softskills.audio and click support us on Patreon.
Man, I got to tell you. I've had a little bit of a rough week, but that list of Patreon names just completely transformed this into the best week ever.
Oh, good.
I am so happy right now.
Do you want to bring that happiness to our first question?
Yes, I do. Okay, this comes from an anonymous listener who says, what advice would you give for working with an ineffective leader whose input is crucial to your work? I'm a senior developer for a mid-sized non-tech company with probably 60 to 80 devs. And in the past year, I've been working more with a VP of software who seems to still be involved in code details, getting pulled into production issues, in-person code reviews, etc. He's a nice guy, but he seems like he's being pulled in too many directions at once. When he schedules a meeting, there's a 50% chance it happens on that day and time. And when we do have meetings, if we bring up questions and high-level issues we need feedback on, he's quick to, quote, take ownership and says he'll do it. Inevitably, they slip down the priority list because production issues and who knows what else, and we're stuck waiting weeks on end for something that if he just delegated the work to someone else, we would have long since moved on. But we still need his input to shape our work. How can we, as lower-level developers, with a manager who is not involved in this project at all, help mitigate these delays?
Ooh. I hear the description of this person and worry that that has been me in the past and could be me again in the future. Because I like software and programming, and I don't know. It's fun. It's not fun to cause production issues. I think it is fun to resolve production issues.
Therefore, but how can you resolve a production issue if it was never caused? Jameson, I think you've created a perverse incentive for yourself.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's so easy to get sucked in if it's a thing you enjoy. Also, it's easy to get sucked into this stuff if there are other parts of the job that you do not enjoy. A lot of VP stuff is like corporate, I don't know, politics is maybe a pejorative way to describe it, but lots of high-level cross-team coordination and setting vision and direction and resolving conflicts and incentives between groups, and all the hard problems that nobody else can deal with bubble up to you. And so it can be a temptation, even at the VP level, it seems like, to just dive into the actual specifics of the work. And I mean, I think it's pretty common to, what's the word? I already used the word pejorative, so I can't use that again.
Pejoritate?
To be negative about leaders who are not very hands-on, who could not do the job themselves. So this is sort of like the ruinous inverse of that, of like the leader who is too hands-on, yet not doing the high-level stuff.
Yes.
I have an answer, but I want to hear your answer, Dave.
Before I give an answer on what I would do in this situation, I actually have another explanation for why I sometimes slip into this mode. Because Jameson, after your confession, I feel inspired that I also must confess. And that is because sometimes leaders want to shield their engineers from things that they perceive are drudge work or below them. And they just say, I'll do that so you don't have to.
Yeah, so it's like you're trying to empower your team, kind of servant leadership. Except sometimes they need a leadership.
That's true.
So the solution to this VP's problem is to change their leadership style. You're not going to do that. So it's a harder problem to incept into their mind, like, oh, I need to work differently. But I think the key to what you need to do is start saying the phrase, I intend to, a lot. If you need feedback or blocking things or information, I don't know. You need to eliminate dependencies on the VP of engineering and just give them an opportunity to approve or deny, basically. So you can say, hey, we need this information. I intend to go figure it out. Or if there's some decision that needs to be made, say, well, I assume we're going to do this, and so I'm going to proceed based on that assumption. Let me know if that assumption changes.
So you're basically preempting your VP's opportunity to do the task for you by saying, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Quick to take ownership, but then doesn't do the thing. That's fine. You just take the ownership right back.
Take it before they can get it.
Yeah. Yeah. You claim the ownership. Bring up questions and high-level issues we need feedback on. I think that, I mean, maybe there's some things you can't do this with. Maybe if it's like, well, the other team might be eliminated by cost-cutting concerns or something, and you say, well, I intend to go fire them then. Yeah. Tell me if that's wrong thing to do.
Yeah, within your scope of allowed responsibilities, I guess.
Yeah, is it like product decisions or how you, I don't know, how you ship dates or something like that? Like, I think if you always start with, here's what I think, unless I hear differently, we're going to proceed this way. It is a lot easier for your VP to nudge instead of decide.
And it might be the case that your VP has a belief about your ability to do this, to do these things. Like, oh, well, this person's already totally overloaded, so I can't possibly ask them to do it, and so I need to do it. And that might be a mistaken belief. And so I actually just got off a great call with an executive coach, and we talked about how to effectively give feedback. And he said something that I've been now thinking about for literally ones of minutes. So, you know, it's very well baked. And he said, you know, Dave, most people, when they give feedback, they talk about behavior. And they say, like, you're doing this, and I don't like that. And they don't often go one layer below the behavior, the things that drive the behavior, which are beliefs. And he said, effective feedback well, ineffective feedback, like in this case, like Jameson, you said, you probably can't change your boss's style. Well, you definitely can't change your boss's style if you just focus on the superficial behaviors that you're seeing. Like,
hello, how's that sounding? Good?
Hello.
So because behaviors are often just a symptom of an underlying belief, that's where the best feedback happens. If you truly want to change someone's behaviors, it's a good idea to have a conversation about what they believe that's causing those behaviors. I would not say that I've mastered this. I haven't even really practiced it much because I typically just focus on behavior because that's kind of the knee-jerk place to focus. But if you truly did want to change your boss's style, one way to approach it is to say, I'm seeing that you pick up a lot of tasks, and I don't know if you're aware, but sometimes when you pick up a task, because you have so much going on, the tasks take a long time to complete, and it's quite possible that another engineer could have completed them faster and we would spend less time being blocked. And this affects our quality of life because we get frustrated that we can't make more progress. It seems like maybe you hold a belief that is stopping you from letting others work on these tasks. Can we talk about that? All very permission-based, of course, in order to get the best outcomes of where they'll actually confront the belief. And you never know how this is going to go because not everyone is very introspective. You know, your boss might be like, what do you mean? I'm just doing a good job here. I'm working really hard. Like, you got a problem with that? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's natural for the VP of software to be the most productive engineer on the
team. You can't argue with these numbers. They're just fantastic. But it could be that you have someone who's willing to be a little bit introspective and say, yeah, I do have a belief that the team can't do these, or I have a belief that the team does a bad job when they take on these little tasks, or last time I let someone do it, they took even longer than I would have taken.
Yeah, I really like that. It sounds like there's a layer between you and the VP, though, because this question asker mentions their manager who's not involved. So, if you can talk to your VP, I think that is pretty reasonable.
But you probably can't. It's probably hard to do, right?
Yeah, I assume so. 60 to 80 devs, you're one of the teams. There might even be two layers, honestly.
Oh, yeah, with that many people,
maybe
probably.
Maybe not, but that makes it even weirder that the VP is like doing code reviews. And
yes, this is a lot of engineers.
Production
for the VP
issues, I can see a VP being involved in, but not in solving them. Typically, they are involved in communicating and coordinating with the rest of the company and guarding the engineers so they can actually focus on solving the thing.
It could be with this VP being so hands-on, it could be that they're actually causing the
pressure. Yeah, they missed stuff in their code review. So that's why they have to be even more careful in the VP code reviews that they do, take even longer on them.
Yeah, of course. The problem here is I need to double down.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Have we answered the question?
Well, I mean, I think what we've done well is we've validated the listener that, yes, this is a weird situation that is not likely to be good for anyone. And you should feel empowered to try to resolve it, but you might be powerless to do so. So congrats.
I think if you tell people, hey, I'm going to do this, stop me if I shouldn't.
Yeah,
that feels a lot different than waiting for permission.
I like that a lot. I think your answer was the best answer.
That can get you pretty far.
Your answer,
oh, thank you.
It's so good because it's like, here's what I can do in my situation without having to exert unholy amounts of weird, organizationally awkward influence on someone else.
Yours is probably a better, like, underlying solution. It sounds hard.
Right.
But and it would be interesting to try to pull off.
We don't advise doing hard things, so let's just go with the easy, short-term.
Take the easy way out, our third motto. All right. Dave, should I read our next question?
Yes, please.
This is from an anonymous listener who asks, I've recently accepted a new position after spending more than 3 years at my first job out of college. Currently, I'm a senior engineer at a large corporate-like company of 300-plus people, but my new role will be at a much smaller startup of 20 to 30 people. I'm excited about the change, but also a bit nervous as I know startups can be fast-paced and I'll need to get up to speed quickly. What advice do you have for setting myself up for success in this new role, both before I start and after I begin? I have a couple of weeks before my start date and want to use that time to prepare effectively.
From 300 people down to 20. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. I like the 20 to 30 size. It just feels good. You're well below Dunbar's number of kind of keeping everybody in your head and modeling their behavior. And yeah, small enough to avoid a lot of coordination overhead. and small enough that there's probably a lot of unsolved problems that you just get to go in and solve.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And be the person who establishes how you do this thing.
That's true. You will be a trendsetter, undoubtedly, even if you don't want to be.
Yeah. So I kind of see two questions in this. How do I get up to speed quickly? And the other one is sort of like, can I do anything to prep ahead of time? I kind of want to answer the second one first, which is, I don't think, I mean, so much of being effective at a company is understanding their code base and the product and the problem space. And that would all be tricky to do ahead of time.
Yeah.
And kind of getting to know the people you work with and building connections and safety with them. So you can't really do that.
There is one thing you can do that I've done at several companies, which is reach out to the manager at your new team and ask them if there's any material that you should study before you arrive. And if it's a 20 to 30 person startup, they might even have stuff they could send you that's like proprietary stuff, but they're like, we don't care. We're a 20 person startup. Got nothing to lose. We're going to send you all of our stuff. Or they, at the very least, they might send you online references or topics that you should become familiar with. Like, oh, we use this CI/CD pipeline tool. You should probably become familiar with that. You can go set up a free account and start learning how that works. Or, oh, we use this language that you maybe don't have a lot of experience with. Let's go read a book on that. This isn't so much startup specific advice, though. This applies at any job.
Yeah. I feel like time spent doing that can be useful, but it'll be much less effective than time spent doing that once you are embedded in the company. I think something you could do that could still be really useful even while you're not there yet is just get to know the product really well. I'm assuming they have some kind of product you can see in some way.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a startup. I'm assuming it's some kind of SaaS app. Get an account. If it's B2B, then ask them to make you like a trial account or whatever and just dive into it and try and learn how it works from a user's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge part of being effective in a lot of places, but especially at a startup. It's like you really want your engineers to know the product well and care about the product. And it can be hard to set aside time to actually just learn how the product works if your head's down building stuff.
Like, yeah.
Sometimes you might not even know about whole features until you have to go touch them to make technical changes. So just an overview of like what the product does and how it works and how people use it, I think would be useful to come into the business with.
Totally. Great idea. Assuming it's launched.
Yeah, yeah. And assuming it's not like a, I don't know, you're not building rockets or something.
Yeah.
What about getting up to speed quickly, kind of once you're already there?
Oh, boy. How do you do that? I mean, you just throw yourself into it. We've talked about how to be effective at a new job in the past. And I'm the kind of person who's just like, look, for the first few weeks, I'm just going to eat, sleep, and drink this company and work a lot of extra hours and kind of throw myself into it. Not everyone is into that style, but that's how I tend to roll.
Yeah. Don't show up and say, okay, so where's like your documentation that I read to just learn everything? Because they don't have it. If there are 20 to 30 people, I'd be astonished if they had good documentation.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say it out loud and then I'll see if I like it. There's always some, it might be oral tradition kind of passed down from the other engineers, but there's always some like, how do you get the thing running process? You could, well, I don't know. This isn't really how to get you up to speed quickly. This is just like a good thing to do when you start a new place. It's always out of date, right? The docs for getting the thing running locally, they rot away as a new person joins and then the process changes, but everyone already has their stuff set up. So you can kind of like go in and update and document things as you go. That's not really about speed. It's more about just like learning things. If it's a startup, they might have this culture already, but I do believe you should try to make a change to the code base as quickly as possible. Even if it's just a README change, ideally it's some kind of actual functional thing of like, I don't know, some little tiny tweak, but I would try to speed run like getting one character, at least one character of code change into the code base.
Yes. And live if you can.
Yeah. Yeah, because that lets you see beginning to end the whole process for getting something out. And that's important. It also might point out like, oh, this process is horrible and I feel like I can improve it so we can make it go a lot faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like joining an early stage startup is a weird mix of like, there's some stuff established already. There's some stuff that was decided when it was a one-person startup and hasn't scaled, but no one has had time to change it. And so there probably are opportunities for being the person to point out, hey, we can go faster now at our scale if we do this thing. It worked when it was just the one person, but
yeah.
Kind of like be on the lookout for things like
our
that.
VP can't code review everything anymore.
yeah. Well, that one, I mean, this is only 20 to 30 people, and those aren't even all developers, probably.
Yeah.
The other VP could do it at 60 to 80, so you got plenty of room.
That's heavy scale. Yeah, that's true. Plenty of room to grow. I think one other piece of advice for joining a startup is be willing to go with the flow and change direction or roles spontaneously. You know, what worked yesterday might not work today, and you might find yourself having to do completely unrelated things because it's a startup and we're all in this together trying to get this thing going. And that means you might not necessarily get to do the very comfortable get a ticket, work the ticket, submit the code, next ticket process that you maybe have become used to at a 300 person company.
Yeah, it might be a lot more open-ended. You might have to do more discovery or deciding or defining.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think it is more important at a startup to talk to everybody no matter what they do and kind of learn how it's much more likely that an engineer at a startup will be working with like sales or customer success or finance or whatever other roles there are at the company than a much larger company where they're much more siloed off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the fun.
Yes, it is fun. I really enjoy that. Also, I'll say that startups are often more open to change than big companies. And sometimes changing the way things work is actually the path to productivity. But at a big company, changing the way things work is a great way to take on a ton of overhead and prevent productive changes or prevent productivity. So like when I worked at a Megaco, the absolute best thing I could do for my team to move fast is to adopt processes and practices that were already widely adopted at the company. And yeah, maybe it's not your favorite programming language or web framework or your favorite database, but it is well understood, will not get any pushback from anyone, and will just flow smoothly. Whereas at a startup, this might actually be the time when you need to make some pretty significant changes, like, hey, this database doesn't work well for this application, or this process doesn't work well, let's change it. And the change cost is really, really, or the switching cost, I guess you would call that, is very low typically compared to what it would be at a large company.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not the embedded, no one's job depends on it keeping the same behavior.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think this will be fun. I think you will learn a lot of stuff.
I agree.
Have we answered this question?
I think so.
All right. What can people do if they want their own questions answered?
Go to softskills.audio and click the Ask a Question button where you can fill out our form. We want to express our deeply heartfelt gratitude to everyone who does that each week. We really appreciate all the questions that come in.
I only have surface level false gratitude for them. But I will continue. I will try to develop deep heartfelt gratitude.
Nice.
All right. Thank you so much. We will catch you next week.